Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun. Here's Tom.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Big Pop Fun with Tom Wilson, the podcast. It's big, it's pop, it's fun. I haven't figured out a way to actually explain how it's big or pop. Well, I'm sort of a pop thing, but fun, I hope. I hope it's been fun for you. A lot of people seem to be listening. I'm glad of that. Welcome back to another magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we hang on together through the dark woods of fear and uncertainty, rumbling along, thinking, I wish there were more snow because if we're rumbling along a little too much in the sleigh, thinking, what is this podcast anyway? What is a podcast? Why did I download this again? Well, I can delete it anytime. I mean, if I just want... And then it's gone. But I hope you didn't delete it. I hope that you're here to listen because it's a good one. It's a good one. It's very windy here, so if you hear the wind chimes just blaring away outside the window, it is windy in California. But if you listen to the podcast at all, you know, technical questions, Tom, you know, cares somewhat, but, you know, I'm not a technical guy, so I just keep going on the magical sleigh ride. Come on along. It's brought to you by art. Go and support artists. My friend Dave Darrow, support DarrowArt.com. Look at his paintings on eBay. There are so many painters now that are literally on eBay, and they're making original paintings, original oil paintings. And they're $100 and some for an original oil painting that would be a treasure in your house. So go, look them up. I don't know. There are a lot of people. And my book, The Masked Man, for Kindle, iPad, for Nook. I think I've sold 4 of them. So thanks so much for going online and buying my book, because if the publisher's any indication, I have made over $90 from sales of the book. It's been in the top, I think, you know, the top 50 for a long time, the top 100 comedy books for the Kindle, certainly on their list. And I think I've made $92. So that's good. But if you read it. I'm going to try to do some excerpts of the book on the podcast, and maybe you'll like that. And anyway, I'm just back from St. Louis. Thank you to all the people of St. Louis, and thank you to Steve Allgaier and Randy out there, and to Mike and to John and all the people that helped me out there. We went to, you're not allowed to call it Panera in St. Louis. You St. Louis people are odd because you just claim it's the St. Louis Bread Company. And I know that's how it began, but we went to... I was pretty late for the gig. The plane was a little late, thanks to, you know, our government and the sequestration and the whole air traffic control thing, which is just a joy. So we were kind of rushing over. I needed a sandwich or something. So we went into the St. Louis Bread Company, and I said, "This looks exactly like Panera." And people talk, "Yeah, geez, ixnay on the Panera pay." Don't say no, because people are like, "It's the St. Louis Bread Company." Okay, that's fine. But I suppose the St. Louis Bread Company franchised it. And when they went to Seattle and Los Angeles and San Francisco and Des Moines, they said, "Well, we can't call it the St. Louis Bread Company. So let's call it Panera." Where I had the bacon turkey bravo, which I enjoyed very much. Anyway, thank you to the people of St. Louis. You know, actresses are an unusual lot. Don't overreact, actresses. Look, we're all an unusual lot. I'm crazy. But actresses, we have to admit to each other, are famous for being difficult and high-strung and... you know, they have to be treated with kid gloves. And my guest today is the opposite of that. But the fact is, actresses kind of have a bad rap on sets. But they're just, like everybody, look, they're just dealing with fear, okay? I know it's the fear of being thought of as bad or just not good enough, or I don't know, or ugly, or gaining a little weight, or what? Look, as I say, we're all crazy. Look, actors are nuts. Actors are crazy in their own ways, and they cover it up in different ways. They cover it up in talking about their acting process, those method guys. Oh, well, with a character, Tim, when I'm doing that, and then I never understood this, but all those method guys where you have to call them by their character's name and everything, they do all that method stuff, and they're talking about their motivation and what they're coming, and then they just start talking about golf, and then everything just melts away. And then they're doing that golf swing thing. I'm not a golfer. I don't have anything against golfing. I'm glad people enjoy it. It's a nice thing on a sunny day, I'm sure. But the thing where you're talking to other guys and everyone's kind of moving their arms like the golf swing thing, like it just seems like a sport where these tiny incremental differences mean that the ball will apparently go 30 feet in one direction or another. So I'm not sure that moving your arms in that way as everyone's talking to each other really, well, I'm not sure what it communicates. What is, oh, you're moving your forearm a little bit there, Nelson. I don't know. But anyway, when they start talking about golf, all that method acting stuff goes away. Comedians, we're nutbags, but we cover ourselves in jokes and distance. You know, you can always make a little bit of distance between people with a good and little bit mean joke. And that's what comedians do. But I'll get back to actresses. Look, actresses are really under the gun. Because the fact is, we can all roll our eyes about actresses, but the camera gets closest to them. That's where it goes up really close. And the director, let's face it, is usually a man, right or wrong. Probably wrong, but the director is usually a man. And a majority of the crew are men. I mean, I've talked about it a lot. The majority, if you look at a movie crew, they're not even men talking about golf. I mean, these are working guys with like ladders and pliers in their belt and stuff and like suspenders with jeans. I mean, working guys. So a young girl, an actress who's gone to school and trained, she's suddenly surrounded by working men on a ladder who are shining a bright light on her face, and they're putting a camera right in front of her face, and they're expecting, hey, they're paying her for greatness, if not complete perfection. So my point is, it's going to mess with a person's head. And I was fascinated by the work of Caitlin Gerard. Because it was so natural. It was so grounded. It was so organic. It was just so good. It was just so good. And it seemed easy to her, which is part of the magic trick. As we talked about, it wasn't that easy for her. And she was really nervous about it. But her work was just terrific. And she's a smart cookie. And she's a ray of sunshine. So I wanted to talk to her. Enjoy my conversation with actress, creative writer, fluent French speaker and bon vivant, Caitlin Gerard.
Big Pop Fun.
Thanks for being on here.
Well, thank you for having me.
We were talking a lot with your lovely sister Mia.
Yes, the philosopher.
The philosopher. We were talking philosophy before, and I should have turned it on to talk a little philosophy. But you're a native Los Angelina.
Yes, I am.
Where were you born here? And we are in an undisclosed location near UCLA.
Born in Cedars-Sinai.
Right there in Hollywood.
Right there in Hollywood. We grew up in Los Feliz.
Right there in
Hollywood. Yep. I think we're pretty normal. It seems like we're fairly normal. People like
Let's
to
not
tell
get crazy,
Caitlin.
We'll get to that.
That's the first reaction I get from almost every person. They say to me, oh, you're from L.A.? Wow, you're so normal.
But my wife's from L.A.
And she's normal.
She's very normal.
Well, that's my thing. I say it's the people who come here that are crazy.
The weird people are actually attracted to coming here because they think
it's what they think.
They think, oh, LA is weird people like me. That's where we go. So they actually do group here.
They do.
But the natives like you,
we're just normal.
You're just normal. So what were you what did your parents do there in Los Feliz?
My mom and dad were actually very successful music video producer and director.
Really?
Yes.
So you were, I'm sorry, but what year were you born?
I was born in 88.
88.
Yes.
So music videos.
That was its prime.
Yeah, that was the thing.
Yep.
I mean, through the early 80s and the stuff that I watched on that kind of those early renditions of MTV. And even, you know, back then there were so many kind of rip-off MTV shows. It was like a half hour of just showing music videos.
Yeah, I remember being a kid and having MTV on at my house, and at the end they always did the little credit. And I always remember seeing my dad's name, and that was cool.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of videos did he... I mean, he was a producer of videos?
No, they had a production company together. My mom was the producer, and my dad was the director.
Ah.
Yeah. My dad is also born in L.A., so he's also from here.
So he's a native Los Angeles. Where was he?
He was born at St. John's Hospital.
Right in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
So right born and raised here.
Yes.
And was he always... sort of directing or directing TV or something?
Yeah, it's really funny, actually. He went to Culver City High, and instead of going to college, he sent a reel to AFI, the American Film Institute, mm-hmm. in Los Feliz.
Los Feliz, right there, yeah.
Right there. And that's a graduate program. And when they saw his work, you know, back then there was no internet, and paperwork, I guess, was not as precise as it is today. But they thought he had gone to college and accepted him as a grad student.
From his films. Right.
And
as we've talked about with other guests of mine, when we talk about film, really, at that time, we're really talking about film.
I mean,
you had to. Yeah, it was a lot of, like, literal physical work of getting film canisters and putting them on the cameras and having it developing and then physically cutting the film on these flatbeds and all that kind of stuff. It was like being a craftsman.
It really was.
It was like being a carpenter building, tables or something.
You were really
building a film.
Yeah.
So he brought that sensibility. I mean, what did he say? He went to AFI
and then from there kind of just jumped. I mean, his dream was always to be a film director, but the way life works, it didn't quite work out. But he had a very brief moment where he had this great music video success. He did a lot of the rappers. So LL Cool J, Da Brat, Coolio, N.W.A., Aaliyah. I'm trying to think of who else. I said Da Brat, didn't I? I don't know. The list goes on and on. And so they were really...
Well, with my knowledge of rappers of the late 80s, I mean, I could go on and on.
I mean, we could do a yes, no, but yeah, it's...
So he was directing rap videos.
Yeah.
Do you know what his first video was?
Oh, for shame. I don't.
No, it's okay.
No, but I should know, but I don't. I don't. I know that his student film that he did at AFI was with Johnny Depp.
The Johnny Depp?
My dad cast Johnny Depp in his very first...
very first role.
In a student short film.
Uh-huh. And mom produced these things.
Yeah, my mom was an editor and
a film editor.
Mm-hmm, and she came from Germany to Los Angeles, and she worked for John Frankenheimer.
I knew John very well in his life.
Did?
I worked with John. Yep, I worked with John in the movie Andersonville. John was an old friend of mine.
Sadly, I don't know which movies my mom has done of his worked on as a team.
If mom was an editor for John Frankenheimer, I'm sure that though she would probably speak of him somewhat respectfully, I'm sure he screamed at her more than on a few occasions. John was quite a guy.
Between you and me, I think he hit on her a lot, too.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me at all. That doesn't even begin to surprise me with the fabulous director, John Frankenheimer, who was
very, very famous
for many of his films.
Yeah.
Many of his films, Seconds, an early... a very interesting movie, and I don't know, whatever, 7 Days in May, all kinds. The Train with Burt Lancaster, these historic movies, but also, of course, Screaming at People and Hitting on Girls.
There you go.
There you go, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Wow. Is your mom a tough lady?
Yes. Very. Very tough.
So I'm sure she would have knocked heads with him. I mean...
Thinking back on the stories she told us growing up, because, you know, you always get snippets of these moments in your parents' life, she really only talked about how very forward he was with her.
Really?
Even I don't know if I should say this, even when she was pregnant with me. So, and she was like, I'm married. Do you see what's going on?
And showing and everything. Yeah. And Frankenheimer's like, look, the German accent is hot. Okay.
Really yeah.
It's just working on me. Look, it's a dark editing bay. Come on.
You don't have to see. We can do things, you know, don't need to see below. We can pretend it's not there.
If someone comes in, we're acting out one of the scenes of the movie that you're
at. Exactly. He knew he was safe, couldn't get her pregnant.
Yipes, stripes.
But it seems like my mom and him had I guess my mom has a very good way with people, so she had a very good way of, you know, negating the situation without hurting his feeling, because she worked for him, and he didn't fire her when she said no, so.
I still believe, and I think it worked with John, in my relationship with John, and it's worked with all those alleged Hollywood tough guys. The people who are going to yell at you and who yell at people while you're standing there and you see the kind of person there. They back down when you just are immovable to them. Or when you tell them to stop, or when you tell them that's not how I work, or whatever, I find.
Yeah, no, I...
Because everyone cowers.
Exactly.
And I've always found the one person who goes, hey, dude, that doesn't work with me. Take that somewhere else. What do you want me to do? Tell me like a human being.
Exactly.
And they just go like, oh, I guess I have to speak normally to this person. Oh, well. And then they end up liking you.
Exactly. It's a horrible catch-22 thing, because it's probably a painful process for the person being yelled at to step forward and do that, but then to get that respect.
I think that, there's a lot of it in Hollywood,
there
I think.
Is.
But I think those kinds of bullies are beaten by just... by just staring them in the face and just going, hey, man, no.
I'm going to take that advice next time ever happens to me.
I think that happens to girls a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know.
Well, all kinds. Let's put not yelling at you.
Yeah.
But a lot of head games.
Yes. That I will most definitely agree with that.
Can we go? I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that, Caitlin. I'm going to seriously get it. We're going to get all into that.
We're going to hash it all out.
But I'm not even done with mom and dad, though.
No, because they're pretty awesome.
Because I guess you would have to admit, what would I try to say here? That you are a petite and lovely young lady of clearly European descent, Germanic. You're a Caucasian person.
Yes.
And you probably in little blonde pigtails, you know, were going off to daddy's work.
Oh, I had cornrows when I was a kid.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
You really did?
Oh, yeah.
Going to the LL Cool J video.
Yes. There was, I can't remember what music video it was on, but we, you know, a lot of, you know, it's a very close-knit community. I'm sure any kind of, you know, any music community is very close-knit, but when my dad would be doing music videos, family members of whoever was the performer would be there, kids would be there, and we would play with them a lot, and, you know, and it just felt very seamless, but I remember the times of learning Double Dutch for the first time, or they played a lot of hand games that I was really into, and then I would take it back to my little white French school and try and do it with them, and they're like, wait, what is this? But it was fun because I kind of was able to teach them, and my sister and I, we would teach all these fun hand games and stuff that we would learn from our friends at my dad's work. And, you know, and then it, you know, it just, I don't know, as a kid, you don't really see colors that
of course not.
Get in the way,
know?
And so, but I just remember really loving their hair.
And
I have very fine hair. It can't do anything. But so we went to... I remember my sister and I went to a hairdresser's house who had been doing the makeup and hair for someone on set. And we went to her place in Compton and hung out in their apartment. And they did for my sister and I the cornrows, but we had to go buy fake hair because our hair is too fine for it.
Uh-huh.
And so we had, I mean, my hair was as short as it was now. It's kind of shoulder length, but, you know, they made cornrows and
like extender things
that went all the way down to our hips.
Wow.
And so we just, and all, you know.
Well, that was fun to shake your head.
Oh, it was
everything.
Great. It was fun. It was really so, yeah, I mean, I don't know where we started with that conversation, but I was always very proud of my
your cornrows.
And then, I mean, I played basketball too. So I loved basketball, and I started playing when I was in fifth grade.
At the French school.
At the French school, but I played in Echo Park at a park.
So let me, we'll let go of dad and mom's career, who, which were very, very noteworthy. Is there, on a reel, is there a piece of work that your dad you think is particularly proud of that he was a part of? Or at that point, because I'm just thinking about videos in the late 80s.
Yes.
When music videos became an extension of just the sales of the song.
Yes.
You know what
completely.
I mean? That in the early 80s, it did seem, and I was watching them, it seemed like there were kind of interesting things going on.
Yeah.
And who's that? Witold Rybczynski, a director, was doing this big video of a bunch of kids like using electric tools to saw up a grand piano on these train tracks. Just interesting films around the song.
Yeah.
And then it seems like as everything does in the business, I guess the guys running the business say to the directors and the producers, hey, video makers, we're trying to sell CDs.
Yeah.
So it's just the song, the theme of the song. At the end, we say, go here to buy it. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, my sister, I can hear me and my sister's in the bedroom right now, and I could hear her whispering, N.W.A. My dad did.
So B.L. is very proud. She's very proud of the N.W.A. work,
I remember my dad always talks about it, but there was a music video he did of theirs, which I think it's, was it Straight Back to Compton? I can't quite remember, but it was a story of them robbing a bank. But it went from them being bank robbers in the 30s to present-day bank robbers.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of told the story between the two different kinds of bank robbers. And
the old style, like the John Dillinger-like bank robber.
Yes, mm-hmm. With the machine guns. And then at the end of the music video, there was this massive explosion that happened. And they did the explosion in downtown Los Angeles. And my dad still...
How could anyone tell the difference?
My dad still has the footage. They knew... An attack happened, and the news and everyone was all over the scene because they thought something had happened in downtown. So within minutes of the explosion happening, which was a safe, thing, but there were helicopters. It was all over the news.
So they didn't have cops at the explosion? They just blew something up? Wow.
And so it just,
what year was this? Because, I'll tell you, pre-9/11, it seems like you still needed like a permit,
They did have permits and everything. I don't know if it was a confusion between, there was not Twitter, whether someone called in, said, hey, a massive explosion just went off, or, and all these news broadcasters just went crazy on it. I'm not quite sure where the miscommunication happened, that this was just your typical Hollywood day where things explode and whatnot. And it was very funny. And so...
People have no idea. Like, I don't think anyone has any idea of how huge and hot and big those explosions actually are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a big, serious thing.
Yeah.
Which is why they have all the special effects people and cops and trucks and fire trucks.
Yeah.
Everything is standing there.
Yeah.
I was in a movie in the 80s and a truck was exploding. So I'm trying to take pictures of this really big, cool movie explosion.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, I'm a block away, three quarters of a block away.
Yeah.
But I'm up in this kind of apartment building outside the window. Uh-huh. I was an actor in the movie.
Yeah.
But, so I think I'm going to get a good shot of this.
Yeah.
And the special effects guy goes, hey, you really can't stand there. I'm like a block away. I mean, he's really, he goes, okay, you can stand there, but let me tell you, it's going to get hot. So just prepare yourself.
Yeah. Like,
what is he talking? It's a movie explosion. Everything.
Yeah.
The thing blew the camera right out of my hand.
Really?
Yeah.
Did it break the windows?
It didn't break the windows, but I mean, it was like a huge concussion.
Yeah.
And I was thrown back against a wall, and he was not kidding. It was a very big explosion. So mom and dad are doing music videos, living in Los Angeles, doing music videos, N.W.A., LL Cool J.
DeBrat,
so they decide.
Queen Latifah.
We have this beautiful Queen Latifah.
Yeah, and Snoop Dogg,
So they decide, you know what would be great? Let's send our daughters to a French school.
Your
German mother. Why did your German mother says, I think you will go to French school. What about a German school, mother? They don't have that. That's close enough.
Yeah, that's pretty much what
pretty much what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, my parents had a tumultuous relationship, and my mom ended up kind of being our sole caretaker, making all the decisions, being the very German woman, strong woman she is.
Uh-huh.
And we, living in Los Feliz at the time, you know, Marshall High was the public school, and there were still shootings going on. You know, Los Feliz today is very squeaky clean and very nice, but at the time it was much more gentrified, and there, you know, the difference between a couple blocks was very different. And so the public school and most public schools in LA are not, sadly, still at this day are not very good. But at the time they were really dangerous too. And so my mom just started looking into private schools, and here was this teeny little French private school a couple blocks from our house. And my mom, being German, was more familiar with their school system and, you know, yada, yada, yada. So
it just seemed sort of more European to mom.
It just felt more comforting because she understood the school system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing. My mom still, she didn't SAT, standardized tests, applying for colleges. It all kind of, she doesn't understand it.
I still don't, too. I've lived here a long time. Yeah. I still get the first thing about it.
Yeah, nobody.
I've got three daughters going through college. My son's, I just don't know. You just kind of, I don't know.
You just
jump through hoops until, like, there are no more hoops. And then you just go live and just go have fun. You'll be fine. You're smart.
Oh, yeah.
You'll figure out a thing to do.
Exactly.
Just, but for a while, you have to go, okay, there's the hoop. How's that? Did you speak French before going to school?
No, but I started there at 2.5.
Oh.
So in pre-K and kindergarten, pretty much the whole school, but they only speak to you in French. And at that age, you don't notice.
You really don't. When you were a little, like 2.5, and you'd spoken English, and the woman comes up to you and says, I'll speak in Steve Martin French.
Yes, please. And then we just go, ah. You know,
and then little kids just go, I suppose she means take the chair and put it at the table.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you learn your ABCs, and then instead of ABC, it's ABC. You know,
it's
kind of the rouge, red. It's, you know, you're learning those fundamental things at that age anyways.
Yeah.
For example, I had a problem because we were learning. My mom only spoke to us in German. So we were doing German, English, and French at the same time. And my sister did so well with all of that. But in around second grade, I actually had a lot of trouble with English.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all three, I think because English, at least when you read something on the page, they're grammatically and also tonally and vocally, there are no rules. So in French, there's accents, and in German, everything is pronounced. And in English, you know, apple can be apple, but ape can be ape, and there's...
Because we're free form, Caitlin.
Exactly.
You can't pin us down. What you say? Ape and apple, whatever.
Yeah.
We do our thing.
Exactly.
We got homonyms.
And that,
try that on German.
It's overwhelming, let me tell you.
Right.
Especially
right.
for an 8-year-old. But so my mom had her friend who is an actress call in pretending to be a child psychologist because they were going to hold me back. And
they were going to hold you back because of my English.
Yeah, they were going to hold me back in second grade again. And my mom's friend called in as a psychologist pretending and said that, you know, I'm perfectly fine. My tests are, you know, doing well. I'm going into after school programs and, you know, I should be admitted into the third grade.
And they bought it. Phone call.
Yeah.
Fake phone call.
They couldn't Google Dr. Julie at the time, so...
Darn that Google.
I know.
It's really messed up a lot of things.
It has. You could get away with so much more before the internet.
You really could. And now you can Google something and get so much false information about it.
Well, that's the worst. You know, it's like,
who knew that the information age, 80% of it would be garbage.
Would be fake, yeah.
So did you enjoy going to French school? At what point did you think, well, this is different than what a lot of kids do?
Well, it was really hard for me, actually. I had a lot of learning disabilities, and the French are just...
Dude, you have learning disabilities, and your mom is speaking German to you. Everyone else is speaking English, and at school they're speaking French.
Yeah. So I didn't
That's a lot it. Of letters, man, to jumble up.
Yeah. It's the, you know... It was an interesting time, but I had a really hard time with that, but... It was very bizarre. In sixth grade, things just started to click. And I just, that's when I became like super nerd and really went into, got into school, got really excited about it. And at that point, in ninth grade, I was bullied at the French school. And then I also really wanted to get into the American system.
You were bullied in French?
Yeah, I was bullied in French.
That's terrible.
It's the worst. It's the worst.
To be bullied in French.
There's a lot of spitting when they're talking, so it's just a mess.
Man, but French people historically haven't seemed like bullies.
Well,
no, in sixth grade, they said.
Yeah, well, also, I think Parisians, you know, they...
Oh, really, the snobby bully thing.
Yeah, and yeah. Just very opinionated, and yeah. I don't know, I was really into basketball, and I think... It had to do that I was playing with the boys and not with the girls because I was just on the basketball court every second I could be on it. So
you're playing basketball with your cornrows, and the French girls had a problem with that.
They did. They had a little bit of a problem with that. So,
but you said you nerded out. Were you just enjoying what did you enjoy about it? You were reading a lot.
I was in this French school. We're going into so much detail.
I'm sorry. I'm just
no,
kind of.
I love it.
I'm sort of interested in it. I mean, you've had
really
a, you've
nice.
Had a, you, you know, you've had a past, an educational experience that
yeah.
a lot of people
no,
have not had.
Yeah.
And I mean, we'll get to being an actress and everything, but
eventually.
I mean, I think that there are, I think a part, what I'm trying to do in my podcast, I think, is having a lot of artists on here and everything and just saying that they've had normal lives. I mean, sometimes out of the ordinary,
yeah.
but they're just kids
yeah.
who grew up in a school and had yeah. experiences and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of, I guess what changed for me was in the French system, because you had also, you know, parents or people living in Los Angeles who were transplants working, for example, for Nestle has a corporation here in
uh-huh.
Los Angeles. So Parisians or French people would come and work here temporarily, and their kids would come to our school, and they had never spoken English. So what they did, and once you got into middle school, is they did a placement testing for French and English to see where you were at. And sixth through eighth grade, you were mixed together, and there were different tiers. And so I was one of the only kids in sixth grade to be placed in the eighth grade reading level for English, which I remember very well. This girl named Olivia Smith was very shocked and said, you got into that class? And that year we read All Quiet on the Western Front and Jane Eyre and The Great Gatsby. And that changed my life forever. I don't know. I had never been into reading. I had always struggled with English. And then I was just thrown these amazing books when I was 12, and I just went crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
When did you, were you performing then, or was it just like little school plays or something? Or
I mean, school was very, they didn't have the traditional avenues of sports and theater and music. You know, it was very much more focused on academic. And then actually we, around the time when I started with basketball, they started getting sports teams. But it was kids like me or other kids, French kids who were really into soccer, that kind of pushed to become part of school programs that allowed us to compete with other schools.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, no, I was really into basketball. That was really my outlet for a long time.
And through high school too?
Yeah.
And really? Was it a French high school? Did you go through?
Well, because I was bullied, I left. I went to a girls' school for a year, which was confusing.
A girls' school here in L.A.?
Yeah.
Where'd you go?
In Pasadena. It's called Sacred Heart.
Uh-huh.
So I went there for a year, and then at that point, my family was having financial difficulties, and my mom looked into public schools, and it was either between La Cunada High in Pasadena or Malibu High. And
what did you choose? So, drum roll.
Well, what do you think? My mom just thought she was just, Pasadena is so conservative,
uh-huh.
and as a single free-spirited mother, she just thought that was not going to be the right environment.
So you ended up going to Malibu High.
Yeah. My sister was there longer than I did. I was there for 11th and 12th grade.
Mm-hmm. And were you, I was just, what, like, where did the bug come from to begin performing?
It was
or
actually
never,
something.
Or you've never had it.
It was something I totally resisted, actually, because we didn't go through my whole parents' life story, but they, you know, with Napster and the crash of the music video industry, their careers kind of plummeted. And having experienced this glorified Hollywood life
right, yeah.
at such a young age, and then experiencing the aftermath of, you know, when you're hot, when you're not, you're really not. And just seeing my parents go through that roller coaster, I just never wanted to be a part of anything in this industry at all. And when I was in high school, I really wanted to go to Stanford. And I knew that it was expensive and we didn't have the money. And so when someone stopped my sister and I and said, you know, would you guys want to be in a commercial? We went to the audition for Walmart and we both got it. And so we got put into SAG. And my mom said, oh, that's great, you're in SAG. And I was just like, I don't know what SAG is, but okay. And then...
Actors Guild for people.
Yeah, Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah, no, wrong.
Truly. And then... it was still something I just resisted, but I started doing commercials to kind of create a savings for college.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't get into Stanford, and I kind of had this crisis where I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I went to school for a couple semesters, left, and then my uncle, who's an editor, he said to me, he said, you know, why don't you try going to an acting class? And he sent me to the Beverly Hills Playhouse, where I was for a year, and I just kind of had fun. And in the meantime, I was still just doing... It's almost these things kept happening, and I kept resisting them. And then my little sister, actually, is really the reason I'm here today, because my sister spoke to a manager, and they were talking, and she was 17 at the time, and I was just turning 21. And she said, you know, I've overheard your conversation, and I overheard that you were saying that you were looking for, you know, a Cameron Diaz type or whatever. And she said, I think I have just the person for you. And at this point, I was having my early life crisis, so I had bought a one-way ticket to my family in Germany and was kind of...
You were going to Germany.
I just didn't know what I was doing. Yeah. And my boyfriend was studying in Italy abroad, and so I kind of just thought, you know what, I'm just going to go and just... see what happens. And so while I was gone, this happened with my sister, and she said, you know, I understand how this works. I'll give you my information, and if you're interested, you can call me, and I will organize a meeting for the two of you to meet. And so this manager, who's my current manager, Chris Proffa, was very intrigued by this little 17-year-old who was just professional and such a boss. And so he called and said, you know, I'm very curious. And my sister said, great, she's coming back at the end of August. I'll make sure something happens.
Your sister got you into show business.
My sister got me into show business.
Now, my question is, would you like me to beat her up for you?
She knew what I wanted, and I was just... Because all these signs and all these things kept coming to me, and I just kept resisting them because I just knew the life of... the artist, and in Hollywood, it's just so brutal and painstaking and really just overwhelmingly.
Have you found it to be that?
Well, I'm a very emotional person, so I would say I...
In what way would you say you're an emotional person? I mean, when you say that.
It took me a while when I finally got into the auditioning process to handle the continual rejection. And also my own anxiety. So I would just put a lot of work into something, and then I'd go into the room and freeze up. And everything I worked on just was out of my reach. And then I'd leave the room and just start crying. And this happened...
A lot of times?
Every time for about a year.
For a year after every audition.
After every audition.
You would come out and cry.
I would come out and cry. I would sit in my car, and I'd either call my sister... or my boyfriend, or just cry. And it was...
Well, and what do you think that was? Was it from, like, oh, I had prepared things to do, and I didn't end up doing them in the room?
No, it was actually a very bizarre feeling that I hadn't felt before, because it was actually really painful, because I wasn't being true to myself, if that makes sense.
I don't know. Well, can we...
Yes, we can explore this.
Explore this. Like, why did you feel you were not being true to yourself in, you know, auditioning for a one-hour cop show
as a witness?
Exactly.
He
ran down the street and he stole my purse, and then he was tripped by Sergeant Jackson, that thing.
Yeah.
How was that... How did you feel you were not being true to yourself?
Well, I just... that I didn't allow myself to just enjoy the whole process, and that I, because it was a very fast love affair with the acting. Once I got into it, I really plunged deep into it, and I grew up very slowly, so I played imaginary games until I was 14. I have a lot of younger cousins, and I guess they kept me young as well. But I kind of saw acting as this way to play make-believe and to allow myself to be other people. And so when I would get into a room and I would constrict and get anxiety and just get really nervous and shaky and you could hear the tremble in my voice, I was denying that existence of that character that I had imagined and created, and here was its moment to live, and I was suffocating it. If that makes sense,
I think it does.
Had a hard time kind of trying to, even for myself, trying to articulate these feelings that I have.
Well, you were maybe cheating that character from its joy in existing.
Yeah. That's what it was. And even if it's just that brief momentary, you're in, you're out, hello, goodbye, you know.
Did that start, were you good early in acting classes?
I mean.
When you start, studying and you get stuff, and were you?
I was told I was very good, but mm-hmm. I always wonder if that's just the acting coach, you know, reeling me in.
Did the other students hate you?
They were scared of me.
You were good then. That's a good sign. That's a good sign. If you finish the monologue and you look at the teacher and they say, that was really good. And then you look at the other students and they sort of have this look that they hate you.
Yeah.
Then it's a sign that you're on to something.
Maybe. I don't know. I have a hard time thinking about whether I'm good or not. I actually
you're clearly good, because you're a young lady who's worked an awful lot early in your career.
I know I keep trying to tell myself that, but even between you and me, when Tom and I were on Zack Stone Is Going to Be Famous together, and when we went to the table reads for a month before shooting, I also had this horrible feeling that I wasn't any good.
And were you crying in the car?
Yes.
You were crying in the car, Caitlin.
I was so scared to go to the table reads because I just thought I wasn't good enough and I didn't deserve to be there. And, oh, God, the things I do to myself are just silly.
Well, maybe it's good to see it as silly now.
Yeah.
Do you see at the end of it, do you see I was not wrong to react in the way you reacted, but you see, like, I certainly deserved to be in that cast and in front of the cameras doing what I did.
Yes, because I work really hard, and I really do think that really pays off. I guess who knows? I mean, I haven't really seen much of what we've done. I'm so new to this that watching myself, I don't know how I feel like every actor you always hear takes it very differently. I don't know. How do you take it, watching yourself in something?
Here's how I take it, Caitlin. Yes. Honestly. You want the honest truth?
Yes.
I never watch myself in
anything.
You don't.
Okay, so see, okay, then I'm not entirely weird about being self-conscious about.
No. I haven't watched myself in anything for years and years and years and years.
All right. Well, that's maybe something I should do, because
I just don't pay attention to it because it's out of my control. All I can do is prepare my best.
Yeah.
Think about it and let it live there.
Yeah.
And just put it out there. And then it's on other people's hands, the people who cast me, the people who are editing it, the music people that are putting music under it, the take that they pick. If they're picking the one that I thought, oh, I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Or if they're thinking the one that I thought, oh, I hope I get to do that again.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I was going through the set. I was not going out to my car to cry, but I was, to be with me watching myself in something was going to be unpleasant for everyone because, I just had white knuckles and thinking, oh, why did they pick that take? Why? Or something. Or I mean, there is a movie that will remain nameless that I think they selected a shot of me, like a reaction shot, that I hate this shot so much because I know that that's a shot where someone was like signaling something to me, and I wasn't entirely, even yeah. just listening. I'm not saying anything.
Yeah.
I'm just standing there like listening to the person. But to me, it looks like I'm just standing there dumbly.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Like, why? Just the way that my face is, I'm like, I was not engaged yeah. with the other character. And, you know, and I was so filled with, how can an editor not see that?
Yeah.
That on the previous take, I was listening to the person. And on this take, I was, because they signaled me to move to the left or something, and yeah. I was daydreaming.
Yeah.
And they put that in the movie.
Yeah.
So finally, I just thought, you know, Tom, you just can't watch these things anymore.
Yeah.
Because you're just not pleasant, and you're the least fun guy at the at the place. So really, right. I don't.
So it might be, yeah.
I try not to go to the even screenings, because then people are going, why are you leaving?
Oh.
Yeah, because yeah. you show up, you say hello to everybody, and then you just drive home.
Yeah.
And then everyone gets to watch it, and you know.
That's a good idea.
So I don't think you're crazy. Look, Paul Newman never watched anything he did.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people.
Yeah.
Some people can separate themselves from it and just look at it analytically and yeah. think, well, I should do this or that differently. And a lot of people just can't. And especially, I think, and I don't mean this as something, you know, when you're not the star of the thing,
yeah.
the fact is you only get a couple of shots at this.
Yeah.
When you are the star of the thing and you go to the director and said, I didn't feel great with that one. Can I come down the steps one more time? Even if it's like, even if we've moved the scene,
yeah.
you know, I've seen movie stars go back.
Like,
you know that scene that we were doing before this morning?
Yeah.
I really feel like I want to go to the desk before. And they just go like, okay, people, back in the office so we could do that thing where he does, you know, for myself, certainly, mm-hmm. and for you now, although yeah. you're going to be a big, big star very soon. But the fact is, when you have a couple of shots at it, you're not entirely happy with it every time,
mm-hmm.
because they're just moving on.
Yeah.
You know, you're a character actor. It's, you can't, like, hey, I missed that word. And the thing, I wanted to lift the coffee when I said, because the thing, hey, man, you know, the sun's setting.
Yeah.
It lives.
Yeah.
You know, so you just have that shot. And anyway, I was way over long in not watching myself. But I'm just trying to commiserate with you and say, no, it's not the worst thing.
I know it's not. And I'm learning that now. You know, I think with the practice and the experience, I'm just like, well, it's not that big of a deal.
It's really not that big a deal.
I guess I just put on so much pressure because I just wanted to please everyone, from my agents to my manager to the people in the room. And I was essentially thinking about what everybody else was thinking and doing instead of just having fun with it. And
can I say one thing, though?
Yes.
Don't worry about pleasing your agents and your manager.
I know, but they're really just nice. Please.
I know they're very nice. I like them very much. I don't know them. Yeah. Maybe I met them when they were on the set. I'm sure they're very nice people.
Yeah, I know.
But don't.
I
you
know.
Just, you
I got past
please,
that one.
Yeah, you please
Luckily.
You. You do your
yeah.
thing. Do your thing. What was the first job that wasn't a commercial that you did? Because you are like you're doing a McDonald's right now, right?
Yeah.
You're loving it.
I'm loving it.
So you've done a lot of commercials because you just are a fresh-faced, pretty girl that looks like you would enjoy...
Eat a burger really well.
Exactly. Just eat a burger at a barbecue and just smile. Boy, she sure is enjoying that.
Yep.
What was your first job that you felt really kind of challenged and you were...
The Social Network.
Uh-huh.
The first job I had gotten when after my sister had essentially set up my representation for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about, I would say, 2.5-3 weeks into just beginning the auditioning process. So yes, it came
very fast. Dude, really?
I know. So it
the Social Network. You're like, well, I'll go out on a couple of these auditions. Boom, you booked a movie.
What? It makes me sound crazy for crying. So, but I'd say it was a good thing because I mean that was a crazy experience in itself. It was a very small role. I play a little assistant at the Facebook office at the very end of the movie. And everybody was really nice on set. It was really great. I was terrified being around, you know, Justin Timberlake and David Fincher. And they were all really great. But I remember my very first close-up, if you will, was we were doing night shoots, and I'd never done a night shoot before, and I fell asleep. And
in your dressing room? something?
On a couch in a room they weren't using.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. And so they woke me up and they said, okay, Caitlin, it's time for your close-up. And I didn't even know I had one. And I just thought, oh, God, I have a close-up. It's 4 a.m. Okay, great. And I'm in the scene. I'm supposed to be on cocaine. And it was very trying because everybody was very tired. And This was the last scene that they just wanted to get done with.
Right.
And I, at the time, didn't know that David Fincher does endless amounts of takes.
Yeah.
So as we were going on and we kept taking more and more takes and I just kept getting more and more nervous because I thought, oh, God, I'm not doing what they
want.
This
means that I'm not doing it right. Right.
Yeah. And then, you know, Justin Timberlake was getting very frustrated and was kind of sighing.
Uh-huh.
And didn't really want to be there. He apologized the next day and was really, really nice. So that's totally fine. But in the moment, I was just horribly terrified.
Yeah.
And so at 8 a.m. when we got done, I called my agent and was crying again.
There's Caitlin crying.
It seems to be the overarching theme.
But in your first job, you experienced what I was talking about, which is as that actor who is not the star, they wait until the very end
exactly.
for you. And then it's like, do it right now.
Yeah.
Right now. I know you were just sleeping.
Yeah.
You're on cocaine. Do it this way.
Yeah.
And you're trying to
now.
Do it. And they go like, come on.
And they just, and the thing too is like, they didn't really need Justin Timberlake there. He kind of crosses the screen, but you don't see him. And I guess they just wanted him to deliver the lines to me.
Right.
But he was so tired. I mean, he had been working all day. And
That's something that they had him stay because usually they will have
someone else
script
do
supervisor.
Exactly.
Just, you know, so
you know
he can
but
leave.
It was what made me so nervous was that I could really tell that he really was really tired and really wanted to go home. And I just thought, oh my God, here I am keeping Justin Timberlake from getting sleep. And I don't know.
Don't block him from his work, Caitlin.
I know.
Don't block Justin Timberlake,
exactly,
man.
Exactly. The genius. I cannot get in his way.
You might have messed up something huge that Justin Timberlake was going to bring to all of us.
And now it's not coming. From you.
Because he missed some sleep.
And I forever will think of that. But it was, you know, it was really.
So in your first job, you cried. How about your second job? Did you cry after that?
No.
Oh,
my
good.
My second job was pretty much the pilot for Zack Stone.
Was it really?
Yeah.
We did that a very long time ago.
We did that
now.
A very long time ago. So, yeah. Because what happened was, and I think this was a good thing to happen to me, because at the time when I got The Social Network, I thought, wow, Social Network, 6 months from now, I'm going to be famous, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And it just kind of, the thought of this huge movie, me not even being out here working in this industry for less than a month and getting something like that, I'm very happy that it didn't go that way because I don't think I would have such a good understanding of what it takes because I think there are people who do get that instant fame.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you don't work for it, you don't appreciate it as much.
I think that's probably true.
And
yeah.
So, but that from The Social Network till the time I got Zack Stone, that was the crying period because I just had this taste and then I realized that I had so much to do and that I needed to work on for myself and everything. And that actually, it was a very distinct moment about 2.5-3 weeks before I went in for Zack Stone is going to be famous. I had this moment where I thought, okay, I'm done with the crying period. Can't do that anymore. It's time to move on. And so that was kind of, this has been the next phase of my experience with acting.
Now, I didn't know. Now, which brings that story that you told me to the front here because we were auditioning.
We were.
For the pilot of Zack Stone is going to be famous.
Yes.
I didn't know that was like your second job. And what happened must have been very, I hope it didn't make you cry.
No, it didn't.
Because
it didn't.
You were quietly reading a book. What
yes.
book were you reading?
I was reading a book for school because I'm still going to UCLA.
Uh-huh.
It was called The Tropic of Orange.
Uh-huh.
It was a class that I was taking on Los Angeles
okay.
and the literature that defines Los Angeles. Los Angeles.
So, this happens very, very rare. It may have happened twice in my entire illustrious, low-level, mediocre career. But you were there, and a lot of young, pretty girls in Los Angeles were there. Because when you go to an audition like that, from the time I was just free into town, and I was auditioning for the jock football player guy, and the room was just full of pretty girls.
Yes.
And Zack Stone is going to be famous, and the room is full of pretty girls. And you were quietly reading your book, The Tropic of Orange, in a big sort of chair that they had there, and trying to think your own thoughts and read your book.
Yes.
And the other young ladies were working on their lines or doing something.
Yeah.
So, and then a guy who will, I know his name now.
It
shall remain nameless unless he messes with me one more time, in which case, oh, he'll be named. But he was doing something that I really dislike at auditions. Too. And that is, you know, he was chatting up the ladies.
Very much
at the audition. And very much so.
He was also, I mean, I had been there. We waited a long time for that audition. So I got to experience this young gentleman in the fullest. And he would walk up to the, you know, when you walk into an audition, you put yourself onto a list, a list. And that's the order that they bring you in. And he would constantly go up to the list and look everyone up.
That was, well, yeah, I'm getting to that, Caitlin. Yeah. I'm working up to it.
I mean, it was a constant thing that every time someone else, he was not sly about it. A girl would come in, put her name in, he would walk right up, Google her.
But everyone knows, and I knew it when I was, you know, auditioning for the young football player.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I know the room is full of pretty girls. It is unprofessional. Leave them alone.
Yeah.
Don't chat up the lady. You're here. Everyone's here to work.
Very much so.
So just leave them alone, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Don't even really bother them going to their car. Let them go and meet them somewhere else because this is work.
Yeah.
So he is going to the list.
Yes.
Googling the actresses' names.
Yes.
Looking up their resumes and everything.
Trying to see if there's, chatting them up about projects they did. And
I'm looking over my audition material, and I'm slowly, you know, the pot is slowly beginning to simmer.
Oh, believe me.
As the guy talks to this lady and that lady, and I'm sort of like, wow, this is really out of line.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there, and he's talking to you, I know.
And
what book are you reading? Huh? You enjoy? I mean, it's just a joke.
Know.
Hey, you enjoying that book? Yeah, I read books.
It's so awful.
I read the book. Yeah, Justin Timberlake has a book. God, I'm thinking about reading that. Whatever he's saying.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm about to say something. I'm about to go, hey, man, why don't you chill out? And we'll just put it. Then he looks me up.
Yes.
On the list.
Down on the list.
Okay. I'm on the list of people to go into the auditions. So he looks me up. He Googles me and says what? I mean, loud.
Loud. I mean, it's a quiet room.
It's a quiet room because people are auditioning in the room right next to us. The wall is like gauze and we're trying to give them the respect of doing an audition.
Exactly.
And the guy screams, oh my God.
I think he even goes, no fucking way.
Yeah, he just.
You're big. Or, you know,
right.
And it. I think everybody in the room just froze.
So he goes, you have to sign some.
Yeah.
I want your autograph at an audition.
At an audition. And so loud, I was shocked that no one else in another room heard it.
I had no idea that this was like your second thing, but I, you know, I gave him the riot act, basically.
Yeah.
I said, that is unprofessional.
No, very much
Everyone here is working, so why don't you sit there and go over your audition material like everyone else is, because I'm here to work. This is my work. This is what I do for a living, and I don't need you bothering me while I'm working. So sit there and zip it.
I know. I remember being so happy, and you go, she's working on her audition. She's reading a book. I'm like, yes, I'm reading a book.
So just leave everybody alone.
Yeah.
I heard from Bo. He went into the audition and complained about me.
Said you were being a jerk.
Yeah. He's out there bothering people and everything. That's why his name might come up in a future time. I don't know. but hey, I ended up getting it. You ended up getting it. We had a good time. Can you? I don't want to take up too much of your time, Caitlin.
No. I don't want to take up everybody else's time.
No. Hey, we're all good. I mean, I'm fascinated by this, and I'm fascinated also by the things that I haven't experienced: going to a French school, having parents so deeply entrenched in Hollywood, in making music videos with N.W.A., you know, LL Cool J, and all that stuff. Here's the thing: I hope this doesn't sound stupid.
No.
But certainly, I don't know what it's like to be the pretty blonde girl who ends up going to these auditions and going into these rooms with producers and people. And you are. And really, I've always wondered, because I've always projected that it must be a difficult thing.
Well.
And how have you found it?
You know, it's actually really funny because when I started, and I don't really like to say that I'm a tomboy, because when I hear people say that, I think that they assume that they're somehow better than girls that aren't. I was just always very much in playing sports. That doesn't make me any less of a girl.
Of course not.
When I started, there was, you know, I had long blonde hair, and my manager, you know, really wanted me to dye it so I could be the sexy beach blonde, because I was, you know, in Malibu, and there was this whole vibe that he got about me being the young, sexy beach blonde Cameron Diaz, whatnot. And so I started going out for roles that kind of fit that stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
And I was having a lot of trouble with it because it just didn't feel right. And when I would get dressed up in clothes that kind of signified that, whether it be short shorts or showing your cleavage a little more, it just, it felt wrong. And so I guess my first step of anarchy was that I just tried to get my hair back to the like a dirty blonde that mm-hmm. I am, and I chopped it all off. And I remember my manager at first being very upset about that, because it, I don't know why the long hair somehow connotes some kind of sex appeal. And then I kind of just started going in for roles that I liked more, which were just the girls that aren't the super pretty girls, because I've never felt comfortable at being that. Even in high school, playing that part, because in high school we all play our parts in the big high school system. And I don't know, it just always felt unnatural. And I even to this day feel like I should work on being comfortable with my sexuality, because I don't think that I am in the sense of what Hollywood deems as sexy.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a real struggle, because it's kind of, I'm trying to just figure out who I am, and then at the same time I have to be aware of how I want people to see me and how I go in to present myself to
as a sort
producers.
Of sales pitch.
Exactly, because that's what we're doing essentially,
right.
Especially at the beginning when, you know, they don't know me, I'm not a name, I'm not, you know, I haven't done much, so what they see is the very first impression goes a long way. You know, mm-hmm. So it's been a really interesting kind of exploration of trying to figure out who I am in general.
Has the cutting your hair and letting it be its natural color
help?
And the following Caitlin's path, has that been
yes.
successful to you?
Yes.
And more successful than the long, bleachy, Malibu, try-to-sales-pitch thing?
Tan skin,
yeah.
The makeup. I mean, I'm not, you sitting across me, I'm not wearing many makeup right now. I don't really like to wear makeup. So I've just kind of been more true to myself. And that's actually, right before the Zac Stone thing was when I kind of realized it. I mean, I had cut my hair a couple weeks before I went in for that mm-hmm. audition that you and I were both in at together. And it's a big marker in my life, because I finally just realized that I need to be true to myself, because I hadn't been. And I think that was also part of the process that was so painful that made me such a crybaby.
You were crying a lot?
Well,
with the long blonde hair, were you crying a lot?
I was crying a lot with the long blonde hair. Yeah. I haven't much so with the hair short.
Well, that's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it worked out.
That's
worked
pretty
out.
Good. Crying less. Crying less is always good.
Yeah, I didn't know I'd be talking about crying so much in this.
It's okay.
Little interview, but it was just.
But I think that makes sense, though, to people. I mean, for those people, I think sensitive enough to understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
That you're trying to do something, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's interesting, because I think we, you know, everybody's trying to do something, but this one is just people are watching you trying to figure it out.
Right.
You know, so that's what makes it a little different from, I guess, any other situation, because you can go ahead and figure it out and no one's there to judge you, or you don't feel judged. But
right. Used car salesmen don't cry about it very much, because
no.
It's a used car.
Exactly.
You are there. You're the product.
Yeah.
And something that you have prepared with your heart
yeah.
is going out there
yeah.
that they reject over and over and over and
yeah.
over.
And so, yeah, kind of being, yeah, essentially with the whole young girl in Hollywood. Also, I think being born here, I don't have any pretenses about going, if I go out in LA and someone comes up to me and offers their services of what they could do for me.
Right.
I'm not fooled by that.
They never lie. out here. They never.
They always give you their business card.
Yeah, they really. They're really honest people who don't. No, they're not in it for money.
They're honest that whole evening, and then the next day is it's a new day, different story.
So, what are you working on now that people can look for? Besides the fabulous Zach Stone is going to be famous on MTV.
I'm at school, so if you're at UCLA, you can look for me there.
Good, good. Always good. What are you studying at UCLA?
Creative writing.
As well, you should.
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah,
great.
So, I mean, I don't have any projects lined up. Just getting ready to jump back into whole auditioning thing.
Yep. And where can people, are you on Twitter and things? Yes. People can find you?
Yes. Caitlin, at Caitlin Gerard. And then I
G-E-R-A-R-D.
So it's C-A-I-T-L-I-N-G-E-R-A-R-D. And then I also just started an Instagram, which is exciting.
Good for you.
Yes, I know.
I don't even really know what that is. I mean, I know it's a...
You take pictures and pretend, and it makes you feel very artistic. You take a picture of a banana, and you're like, ooh.
Does it have to be from a phone? Is that the thing with the Instagram?
Yeah.
So it's just like linked to your phone.
It has to be from your phone.
Has to be from a phone. So that's what makes it, oh, here are my chips.
Yeah.
Or here's my went to Chipotle, exactly. And this is the trash can.
Yes, very much so. Here's a shadow.
Exactly. Oh, shadow. I thought it looked cool. The sun. It's a phenomena I see at the end of days where my shadow is actually on sidewalks. Wow, that's really good stuff.
Yes.
And studying creative writing, as you are, and being a reader, I have to ask you what your favorite novel or favorite couple, if you have to...
If you look at my bookshelf back there, I have pretty much everything of F. Scott Fitzgerald, and I am a huge Kurt Vonnegut fan.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I've read
What's your favorite book of Kurt Vonnegut's?
Ooh, that's going to be hard. I really liked Player Piano.
Mm-hmm.
Bluebeard was really good.
I love Bluebeard.
Yeah.
Bluebeard is my favorite Kurt Vonnegut novel.
Yeah, I really loved that one. My last one that I read was Sirens of Titan, mm-hmm. which my sister gave me.
Yeah.
That was her favorite.
I just love Bluebeard because I think it's the only Kurt Vonnegut novel where the protagonist ends up just very happy at the end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it ends, happy Rainbow Caribbean.
Yes.
Which was, he was a painter and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great book. Anyway, well, it's so wonderful of you to share your time with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you,
Tom. It's a very interesting and unique look at the beginning of the career of an actress with a lot of wonderful things ahead. And I don't only mean in acting, I mean in writing and in just being a creative artist. Whatever happens.
Exactly.
You're great. Thanks.
Well, thanks, Tom.
Thank you. I'll thank you again. Thank you again. Thanks.
Thanks, Lord.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much to Caitlin Gerard, a wonderful actress and a magnificent student of creative writing at UCLA. We all know that when you get a degree in creative writing, the world is your oyster. I actually studied creative writing at UCLA, but in their extension program because I didn't want to have to actually enroll in the school. I just wanted to take the writing classes. So I actually have a doctorate in UCLA extension. Thanks to Emily Wilson. Thanks to Chris, Katie, everybody at Nerdist Industries. Thanks to McPherson Guitars for helping me on the live show. I'm coming out there. I'll be in Orlando soon. So, but thanks for listening. Consider subscribing, telling a friend about the podcast, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.